Next case is 06-540, Nina Zapatelli versus Karen Miller. Mr. Heben.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Ed Heben, and I represent the appellants, Dr. and Mrs. Miller, who are the sellers of their home in this case. This case involves the sale of a house with flooding problems in the basement, which were disclosed on the property disclosure form, which were recognized by the buyers in their own inspection, and which is also reported to the buyers on their home inspection report from a professional. However, the Court of Appeals ignored this court's jurisprudence on caveat emptor and justifiable reliance, and in fact awarded attorney fees in this case, though there was no finding of punitive damages, there was no finding of malice, and there was no award of attorney fees by the jury.
Counsel, there wasn't an award based on fraud.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And has this court ever addressed whether or not attorney fees should be allowable if the jury finds fraud on the part of the defendant?
That is the issue how the defendant or the plaintiffs presented, Your Honor. But this court, in its jurisprudence going back to 1859, has consistently held that for an award of attorney fees, there must be an award of punitive damages.
Have we ever said, have we ever addressed the question, if it's fraud, whether or not attorney fees are allowable?
Your Honor, I think a number of the cases that from this court have been cases involving fraud.
So there are cases where the recovery was for fraud and this court said no attorney fees.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor. Specifically, Columbus Finance, Inc. versus Howard, it actually cited, discussed Roberts versus Mason and stated if punitive damages are proper, the aggrieved party may also recover reasonable attorney fees, and I believe that was
before you get to the merits, I'm wondering, and it seems that's the appellee's position, maybe it's, perhaps it's not. I'm wondering if there isn't a waiver on this issue, or it's your position that
Yes, Your Honor.
That there's waiver because the plaintiffs did not object to the answer that the judge gave to the jury's question, didn't object to the charge which connected attorney fees to punitives only. And so it's over in terms of this case, leaving open the question of attorney fees for fraud in some future case.
Well, that would be for the court to make that determination, but that was the point in this case. The actual jury instruction on punitive damages and attorney fees was the jury instruction proffered by the plaintiffs. The actual interrogatories used for punitive damages and attorney fees was the interrogatory presented to the court by the plaintiffs. And in fact, there was no objection to the jury instruction or interrogatory because the court accepted the plaintiff's jury instruction interrogatory. Okay.
And there was no objection to the answer to the jury's question
that
the judge gave during the jury deliberations as well.
That is correct, Your Honor, except the court stated in its opinion that both parties, you could say, objected because the court did not use the exact wording which was proposed by either party to be presented to the jury. The plaintiff's position said that the answer should have been just a flat no, you cannot award attorney fees, and the appellee's position was that he went on in a few sentences, but he basically said you have to have punitive damages.
But there's nothing in the record in which the plaintiff is arguing at that time, look, if you find fraud, you can award attorney fees.
That's correct, Your Honor. In fact, the plaintiff was urging just the opposite. All during the all during the case, there was never any mention whatsoever until the Court of Appeals that attorney fees should have been awarded under any other circumstances except the awarding of punitive damages.
Now, we accepted this on the limited question of attorney fees. You argue in your brief that there's still room, procedural room, for us to knock down the whole outcome.
Yes, Your Honor. I've been practicing 31 years and primarily in this area of residential construction defects, mostly on the plaintiff's side, to be honest, Your Honor. And this is the worst travesty of justice I've ever seen. And that's saying a lot, at least in this area of the law. The appellate court, besides going off on this tangent awarding attorney fees, they completely ignored the doctrine of caveat emptor. You know, we have a purchase agreement which has an inspection contingency and an as-is clause in the purchase agreement. And all the courts of appeals in the state have consistently held that if there is an as-is purchase agreement, the only causes of action that couldn't even be presented to a jury is a cause of action for active fraud, not passive disclosure, not breach of contract, not negligence. The court took this.
A lot of those cases would have been decided before you have this relatively new statute that requires a homeowner to sign this form, which is really designed to protect realtors, but it sets up a number of representations that the homeowner has to make and did make in this case.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the homeowner in this case, Dr. Miller, he's a VA medical doctor who's traveling across the country, and he did disclose the only incident that he knew of during the time that he had the house, that water came in through the windows in October, November 2002 as a result of a tornado. The transcript testimony of the plaintiffs was when they went through the house, they saw water stains throughout the house. They also had a home inspector that mentioned the water stains and also mentioned if there's any mold or mildew, you should go to a professional environmental specialist, which they did not. But the biggest, I don't want to use the word fraud in this case, is the fact that the Court of Appeals in their opinion said that there was active mold in the house at the time of the sale.
Well, let me just stop you there. Justice Piper will agree that issue is not before us, and the appellee hasn't briefed, as I read the appellee's brief, he hasn't briefed it because we allowed the case on Proposition Law 1, which is the attorney fee issue. I've got a question about that I hate to see you take up too much time on an issue that I'm not prepared to decide without supplemental briefing, because our order clearly and was pop one only. So if I may, I'd like to ask you to respond to the appellee's argument that a finding of fraud is a finding of bad faith, which would equal therefore ill will or the exemplary damage element. What's your response to
that? My response to that, Your Honor, is the reference that appellee made to Roberts versus Mason, the use of fraud, the word fraud, it was not referring to the tort fraud. It was referring to a mental state of mind. It said fraud, insult, and something else. And those, as the court has gone over the last 100 years, those are the type of terminology that have resulted in the word malice and the definition of necessity of malice to have punitive damages. There is no case law whatsoever for 100 years in this court saying that. In fact, there's case law saying just the opposite, saying for fraud, there must be a finding of egregious fraud or to even support the finding of a punitive damages. There is no case law whatsoever supporting the appellee's position. Now, the use of bad faith again, in some cases it's mentioned, or bad faith under attorney conduct, or bad faith during many different circumstances, but bad faith again, it connotes the finding of malice or some type of actions on behalf of the plaintiff that are extraordinary and egregious. And the jury in this case, and result in their interrogatory, specifically found that there was no malice in this case. and there was no jury instruction or interrogatory presented to the jury asking to make a finding of bad faith.
Do you wish to comment at all? As you, in your reply brief, you let us know that the plaintiff apparently offered a jury instruction that was based on punitive damage, that attorney fees, you could only receive attorney fees if it was punitive damages. Apparently he's changed his position here. Is that's the way I take your reply brief?
The change of position really was first brought up at the Court of Appeals and now brought at this court. But at this court, they changed position and now brought in the element of bad faith, and also brought in the element that the argument is just because they spent attorney fees that they should be compensated for them in a fraud case. And I see no support in the law for any of these.
Was waiver argued to the Court of Appeals, or did that not come up because that wasn't an issue at that point?
No, I think it was argued to the Court of Appeals, not the term waiver, but the jury instructions. It was obvious from the record were the jury instructions from the plaintiff. The
Court of Appeals doesn't seem to address waiver at all in their decision on attorney fees. They just simply talk about the question that came from the jury as some sort of evidence of what the jury might have done had they been perhaps properly instructed.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And in fact, it was very disturbing to me that just because one juror asked a question, we don't know if that, you know, how many people really were even interested in that issue, because one jury, somebody asked a question, can we award attorney fees without punitive damages? The court jumped to the conclusion that the jury wanted to award attorney fees. And there was, eight jurors in there, and only six of them voted in favor of the plaintiff, and who knows what they were thinking. And that opinion really doesn't tell me a whole lot, Your Honor.
If you want to take, you've got quite a bit of time, if you want to take some more time to respond to Justice
Pepper's question. I'm fine, Your Honor, unless the panel has any questions of me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heben. Mr. Morrell.
Good morning, Chief Justice Moyer, Associate Justices, Counsel. My name is Dan Morrell, and I represent Nina and Tony Zapatelli, as well as Maria Capretta.
Mr. Morrell, I had the same question for you. Are there any cases in which this court has held that attorney fees are recoverable in a straight fraud case that doesn't involve punitive damages?
I believe there are a number of cases, Your Honor, that have been cited that there has been, when there has been a finding of fraud, that attorney's fees have been found recoverable by this court as part of compensatory damages.
Okay. Then why didn't you object, or whoever was trial counsel at the time that this question came and the judge answered it? And isn't that waiver for purposes of this case?
Your Honor, actually, we I was trial counsel, and not only did I object to the court's proposed answer, counsel for the defendant objected to the court's answer. Those conversations took place in chambers, and after we came out on the record and the court answered the jury question, the court then, after he dismissed the jury, let us put on the record what our objections were and how we would have answered the question. And in fact, I put on the record that, and I'm quoting, I obviously wanted the court to answer the question by stating that compensatory damages are in the province of the jury as to what they determine those damages are. So I don't think there was a waiver at all, and I think we did object.
Well, that doesn't say anything about attorney fees.
Well, the question itself was, if we do not find punitive damages, can we award attorney's fees as part of compensatory damages? And I've asked the court in chambers and on the record that it is in the distinct province of the jury to determine what compensatory damages are. Let's not lose sight of the fact that this jury.
So in any case in which someone is seeking compensatory damages, the jury is free to add in attorney fees?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And I don't see this as the Pandora's box that appellant's counsel seems to want to make this. We're dealing with a specific area of the law that the legislature found was in need of addressing. And that was the fraud that was rampant in the disclosures to residential real estate buyers. And the court specifically, or not the court, but the legislature specifically crafted this statute to address that issue. And this court, as well as other courts, have found that, you know, this statute created a duty to disclose, and failure to do so was the equivalent of bad faith. As a matter of fact, the statute itself, when cited, talks about honesty in fact as what is required, and the failure to disclose would result in.
I assume you put evidence in as to the attorney fees.
Yes, we did, Your Honor, and I cited to it in our brief, and it's in our supplement. And Ms. Zampitelli, we proffered her affidavit that at the close of trial that she had paid $50,000 already in attorney's fees, and that the fee bill was beyond that, but that was the amount she had actually paid, and that is in the record.
Counsel, in response to Justice Pfeiffer's question, you were focusing on a question that one juror asked during deliberations. But during the jury instruction phase, the court did link attorney fees to punitive damages, did it not?
I don't think there's any question that attorney's fees can be linked to punitive damages. I think the issue before this court is whether or not if there's the jury specifically finds fraud in the completion of the residential property disclosure form, can the jury and or the Court of Appeals craft an award to include the attorney's fees of counsel.
And did the jury specifically find no punitive damages in this case?
The jury did not award punitive damages.
Okay, so the jury was asked to consider punitive damages.
That is correct.
It chose to say no.
That is
and
correct.
And yet the problem here is that the attorney's fees was awarded solely on the issue of fraud.
Well, I think the Court of Appeals has equitable power to review and to utilize its equitable power to review the underlying case de novo and to find that in the interest of justice that it can use its equitable powers to compensate the plaintiffs and make them whole, and that's what they in fact did in this case.
But counsel, the appellate court did not find that punitive damages should have been awarded here.
I agree. The Court of Appeals found that the award that was presented by the jury or was given by the jury was fully supported by the evidence in the case.
And that's based on their reading or interpretation of Robert versus Mason and the Soren case, is that correct?
Well, I can't speak to what the Court of Appeals was thinking when it decided it. I think the Court of Appeals noted initially on this issue that it was exercising its equitable powers to and it felt that it had those equitable powers to award attorney's fees in a case that the jury specifically found there was fraudulently completed residential property disclosure form.
Counsel, part of the problem I have with your argument saying cases allow attorney fees and fraud is all the cases you cite may call it compensatory, but they still link it to punitives. I mean, your case in Peckman says the court said the recoverable is compensatory in an action where an award of punitive damages is proper. And so the court seemed to be separating them out as what they call the type of damages, but the cases you cite still always link them to a finding of some decision that is sufficient to support an award of punitives. And well, in this case, when they said no punitives, that seems to be a definitive distinction from the cases you're citing.
I think the prior courts that have been referenced make a distinction between fraud and actual malice as two separate elements that can be addressed in awarding attorney's fees. And the actual malice, I think, is what we all refer to as the punitive issue. But in the instances that have been cited in the courts, that there is a differentiation between findings of fraud and actual malice as separate and distinct.
But they link the attorney fees to the malice side, not the fraud side, in the cases you cite.
Well, actually, in Zoppo, they actually found, and there was a specific finding in Zoppo, that since there was not a fraud in the denial of the insurance coverage, then they went to the actual malice. And that court certainly seemed to recognize that if there was a finding of fraud, there would be a support for attorney's fees. But since there was not fraud in the denial of insurance coverage. It then looked to the actual malice portion of the record and found in that case that that was appropriate. I think there was a differentiation in Zoppo as to fraud and actual malice.
But the punitive damages, again, still are linked to actual malice, and the attorney fees keep being linked to punitive damages or actual malice. And I can't find in any of the decisions you cite where fraud without the, you know, the higher level of fraud or the malice or the ill will side of fraud, I can't find punitives being or attorney fees being linked to that absent those other elements, which the jury clearly didn't find here.
Well, the jury found on five separate interrogatories that the defendants fraudulently concealed material facts, that those that was the intention to mislead these individuals, that there is plenty of case law that has been cited that links the insurer's bad faith and makes the equation between the failure to act in good faith in answering the disclosure form, which is a specific duty identified by the legislature as the equivalent of bad faith, and therefore that would or should permit the award of attorney's fees in such that in such a finding.
Counsel, I'm curious, if we affirm the Court of Appeals, does this case have a second jury trial on the issue of attorney fees?
No, I think the court is pretty clear that the amount of attorney's fees, while it is discretionary for the court to submit it to a jury, but this court certainly has the power and authority to hold an evidentiary hearing on the reasonableness of attorney's fees. And actually, before this appeal was taken, Judge McCafferty had set a hearing for the determination as to the reasonableness of attorney's fees.
So the court would set them rather than a jury, even though you say it was a jury question.
I think the issue of the jury is to whether or not attorney's fees should be included in compensatory damages. I think it's in the court's province to determine the reasonableness of those of the attorney's fees.
Not the jury's.
I believe the case law reflects that the court can, in its discretion, utilize the jury to determine the award of attorney's fees, but that the court is also under discretion to, because there's no constitutional right to a jury trial on the issue of the amount of attorney's fees, and that certainly has been addressed by this court. And I think the court then has the power and province to make a decision to award attorney's fees, and that discretion could be anywhere from zero to whatever the attorney's fees are, and the court's determination is what is reasonable. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Morrell. Mr. Heben, you've saved 3.5 minutes of your time.
The court asked me previously a question, were there any cases determining the award of attorney fees and in fraud cases. I mentioned Columbus Finance versus Howard, but I should have mentioned, more importantly, this court in Charles Combe Trucking versus International Harvester on page 9 of my merit brief. This court held that punitive damages are not available for the tort of fraud absent ill will, malice, or gross and egregious fraud. A jury interrogatory was presented to the jury, and the jury found that there was not malice in this case. Also, the case of Zoppo versus Homestead did not discuss fraud, but it discussed the same elements of bad faith, since this was a bad faith insurance case. And Zoppo said the same thing. Attorney fees may be awarded as an element of compensatory damages only where the jury finds that punitive damages are warranted. So both of these cases of this court are directly on point with the bad faith issue and the fraud issue. Talking about Mr. Appellee's state that they objected to the response to the court's jury, the question to the jury and the response to the court's response to the question of the jury, but Mr. Morrell stated on supplement page 126, I obviously wanted the court to answer the question by stating that damages are in the province of the jury as to what they determine those damages are. and Mr. Morrell didn't mention the second half of the statement, and that punitive damages and attorney fees are awarded as part of the punitive damage award. This was Mr. Morrell's statement at trial in response to the judge asked them afterwards, well, here's what did you think of what I said? Well, I obviously wanted you to say they were part of this, but the punitive damages and our attorney fees are part of the punitive damage award. So we have a situation where the appellee agreed with the response to the court to the question from the jury. We have the appellee drafting the jury instructions saying it's punitive damages for attorney fees. We have the appellee drafting the interrogatory that says it's punitive damages for attorney fees, and we have no objection to anything. I don't see this case at all. It's very disturbing to me, as I said initially, the whole opinion, the whole award, no explanations, and awarding attorney fees and referring it to the court to determine how much attorney fees because somebody asked a question makes no sense to me and has no basis in law or fact.
And if we reverse the Court of Appeals, counsel, what is your request?
My request is that the entire case should be reversed. In this case, there obviously is no detrimental reliance as you have in Gaines versus preterm here and the elements of fraud. You cannot have detrimental reliance, and the case law is consistent throughout the state.
But how do we get there on this issue that's before us?
Your Honor, I
know that's what you like, but
Your
how
Honor,
do we
I
get
think
there
the,
on this?
I event? Think the court has the inherent jurisdiction to look at all the issues of the case in interest of justice. The opposing side filed a bunch of motions to strike my brief, and which were not granted, and had the opportunity to respond to those issues, but decided not to, basically because they have no case law. I mean, the Court of Appeals made a decision, God only knows on what basis. There's nothing in the record that there was mold in this house at the time of the sale. There's nothing in the record for any of the conclusions that the Court of Appeals came to. They decided they want to help out these poor people that bought a house, and they found a way to do it. And what I'm asking for, there was no detrimental reliance because they had a home inspection. They testified in the transcript that they saw the mold, which had already been remediated. A contractor testified at trial that, yeah, they found mold on, but by May 27th, they had remediated all the mold. And Mrs. Zapatelli said, yeah, I saw that. They had white stuff and they covered all the stuff. And I asked my realtor about it. And their own realtor says, so don't worry about it. It's been taken care of. So there can't be detrimental reliance.
You're light on. You've used your time.
Thank you, Your
Thank
Honor.
You. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.